It's the Over the Monster podcast.
I'll go three and out. At least I made it to the game.
Hello, welcome to the 11th episode of the Over the Monster podcast. I am Matt Corey. I'm broadcasting today. This is like my world tour, sort of, minus the world part. Broadcasting from Virginia, my parents' bedroom, actually, because that's how awesome I am. You can tell I write for a blog. Anyway, with me today, as always, Mark Normandin. Mark, how's it going?
I haven't heard the parents' bedroom as a blogging insult yet.
No?
No. Maybe it's a podcasting insult. I'm not really sure.
Do people podcast from their parents' bedroom?
But let's start that rumor right now.
But blog from their parents' basement? Is that
how
it works?
Yeah, they blog from the parents' basement. I mean...
Where do people tweet from? Like
their phones.
Oh, okay. I was going to say like their parents' garage or...
No, I mean, you don't need to be anywhere specific for that.
Okay. You just shoot it down, man. Just shoot it down.
I did.
I know. And you're in Boston, as always.
Yeah, Boston-ish.
Boston-ish. All right, let's see. Where is the list of things to talk about?
Who uses a list? I mean, I never use a list. Matt preps me before every show on what we're going to talk about, and I just kind of nod and drink.
I tell you exactly what to say, too, which is the dirty secret of this podcast.
That's not true at all.
Everything is written down to the letter. See, I knew you were going to say that's not true at all because I wrote it.
Unless there's like a director out there who now thinks I'm a fantastic actor because I can do all this without having my lines in front of me, in which case...
You do memorize all your lines. Yeah, you memorize all your lines before the show. Sometimes even just a couple minutes, you know, before the show. An hour and a half of talking.
Yet he still won't let me turn one of the episodes into a musical.
It's because I can't sing. It would just be embarrassing for everyone.
It wouldn't be the first musical with people who can't sing.
You know, I can't even sing to my kids. That's how shameful it is.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on from your failure as a father and talk about...
That would be a long podcast. So, yeah, the first thing we're going to talk about today is the pitching. The Red Sox starting staff has been kind of... I guess we've been pulling sort of a 2006. Guys have been kind of falling by the wayside as
the season... Don't talk about that year, please.
Okay. it's more gradual.
I have horrible Kevin Jarvis related memories from 2006 that I would rather repress.
Who was the guy who had? I forget what disease he had, but he had to have his medical device with him on the mound. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, he pitched for the
Orioles for a while, and then the Red Sox ended up with him.
I think he had. Did he have diabetes?
Something like that.
And it was like an insulin pump or
something? Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
He pitched for the Tigers, too, I think. Oh, man, I can't remember his name.
Johnson?
Yeah, that's really generic, but I think that was his name. I just can't remember his first name.
Well, let's call him Bob.
I don't want to call him Bob.
All right, well...
now you're making me go to Baseball Reference, not only on a podcast, but to look at the 2006 team that I'm trying to forget.
I think
the same as like... The 2001 through 2002 teams.
Don't worry. I think everyone's already turned the podcast off.
No, it's too late. It's too late. Now I need to know. Jason Johnson.
There it is. Jason Johnson.
He only had six starts.
Wow. And somehow it is burned into my...
Holy
my,
Kyle Snyder.
My mind's retina.
Kyle Snyder. He had 10 starts.
Man, I remember that. Yeah.
I really did bury this season.
I have seen Kyle Snyder live and in person in spring training. He is very tall.
Wow.
Yeah, very tall. And very nice. Signed a lot of autographs.
At least he's nice. Yeah. Was that the year Matt Clement got hit in the face, or was that the year before? I think the year before he got
that
hit.
That was 05, yeah.
That was a shame, because you know what? He should have been a real good pitcher, but he just pitched like a guy who just got hit in the face by a ball. The rest. No, I'm serious. Like, I'm serious. He really did. He was never the same after he got hit.
That was some metaphor, man.
It wasn't a metaphor. It was just that's exactly what he pitched like. I mean, some people have ligament problems, and then they pitch like they have ligament problems. This guy pitched like he got hit in the ball, face with a ball.
Wow, you almost said something else.
Well, I almost said he got hit in the balls with a face, but
which is funnier, and the whole thing is still sad, though.
I just don't know how that kind of person would pitch.
Oh, boy. All right.
Anyways, I'm burying 2006 again, although I will say, Kaysen Gabbard, what happened to him?
He had so much talent, so much promise.
He should have been totally like just a fifth starter. I was going to say average, and then I realized I was giving too much credit. But I think maybe he got hurt with Texas. I don't know. But, you know, he was all right.
He was incredible for the Sox. I mean, he was sort of their Aaron Small. Not that good, but...
Well, I think they got rid of him for that reason. It was like, oh my God, his stock is high and someone actually wants him. Go, go, go!
Yeah, exactly.
Except they got Gagne.
Yeah, they did. They got Gagne, and they actually did trade someone who could potentially have some use still in Angel Beltre.
Let's move on from this because I just saw Abe Alvarez's name. Devin Hanczak!
This is This is the trip down a nightmare lane.
I can't think about this anymore because now they have all these injuries and Devin Hanczak's going to come out of somewhere.
He's going to jump out at you and he's going to throw a hanging slider. So the Red Sox pitching this year, scary but not as scary.
It's like you realize. I think 2006 must have been a lesson in stockpiling starting pitching depth. Because, you know, you get to that point where it's like, okay, we need to use Kevin Jarvis for three starts. And we're going to try every single body we have in the organization that's no good.
In truth, though, there was really nothing they could have done that year.
Not all had to be done before the season. You know, it's that sort of thing.
But, I mean, even if they'd had eight guys, which, you know, they would have run out. I mean, nobody has the amount of pitching depth to withstand that. I mean, not the Yankees, not anybody.
Well, that was the 2011 season begs to differ, since they are using their eighth starter, or their seventh starter right now, and we have options for an eighth.
That's true.
But they stockpiled it in the winter. That's the key difference right there. And none of them are named Jason Johnson.
Which is good.
It's a plus.
Yeah, although I'm sure Johnson's hiding somewhere in the weeds. He's in Theo Epstein's Rolodex somewhere.
Oh, I hope not. Playing the do not call pile.
Yeah, right. But so let's go through some of the injuries and talk about what they mean. I mean, I guess Beckett had a case of the pukes, but then he came back and he's been after I guess one sort of rough start. He was effective in his last outing. I mean, do you expect him to keep pitching the way he was earlier in the year?
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason not to. It's you know, there's a lot of people being like, oh my God, his batting average on balls in play is low. He's going to regress so hard. Like, no one has ever regressed this hard before. I mean, whatever. So he won't have, like, a 2.1 ERA or whatever he's got right now. He'll have, like, a 3 ERA. Right. I'm like, oh, that's terrible. I don't know how we'll ever get by. You know, they have a high-quality defense. They're going to have fewer balls in play allowed. He's had his filthiest stuff this year. He's had his command. Are we really going to be surprised if he posts a season where it's a little low? Or a half season where it's a little low, you know, he'll be fine. It's not like just because he had a 2 point whatever ERA in the first half, it doesn't mean it's going to literally even out and he will have a 5 ERA the rest of the season.
Right, right. And even if it did mean that, I mean, that's what happened last year. So, you know, you could look at this as the, you know, in a global sense as the reaction to last year, even though it doesn't actually work that way.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some, Dave Cameron wrote an article, which he and I talked about a little bit in his comments, about how, you know, if you combine Beckett's 2010 and his 2011, it looks like two halves of a season, you know, where right. He was unlucky in one and he was super lucky in the other. I mean, that's not really perfect because his back was bothering him and his curveball was different. It wasn't as effective. He didn't use it in the same counts. If you weren't watching him, it doesn't look like anything was really different.
Right. Well, you know? I mean, has he been super lucky? Is that a fair statement?
He's been lucky in this. I mean, yeah. Even if he had some control on balls in play, which I don't believe there's any evidence that Beckett does. In fact, most of the years where the Red Sox have a great defense, Beckett's batting average on balls in play is well above the league average. Okay. So, I mean, I don't think he's he lives in the strike zone a lot of the time, so he gives up more hits. So, yeah, he's been lucky, but he hasn't been so incredibly lucky. You know, he's not Jeff Karstens. Like... If when luck runs out or anything, he's still going to be Josh Beckett.
Right.
You know?
Right. Right.
So maybe he won't be like a serious Cy Young candidate in the second half. You know, he won't keep pitching like he's Justin Verlander or something, but he'll keep pitching like he's Josh Beckett, which is pretty friggin' good.
I got his stats up here. He's definitely got more guys left on base than is usual. But his walk rate is less. His strikeout rate is a little less too, which I have to say I'm surprised at it. I feel like it seems to me, at least anecdotally, that he's been striking out more guys this year.
He's had a couple of starts where he didn't really pull in a lot of strikeouts, but
this might be
the first time where the defense has played well and Beckett has benefited from it. I mean, it's weird. If you look back, I think Beckett's lowest batting average of balls in play year as a Red Sox, I really don't remember. I think it was 2009, which was like the worst Red Sox defense that probably either of us has seen.
It was 2006. He had a 262 average. 2009,
really?
Yeah.
Batting average on balls in play? Or?
Yeah, according to Fangraphs. I have it up now. 2009, he has a 290, and the other 2 years he's above 300. But it's sort of within the bounds of,
He'll still bury 2006 completely. Or maybe his batting average on balls in play was 260 because he gave up 9,000 homers.
He didn't leave very many guys on base that year, though. He was under 70% that year, so.
Thank you, home runs.
That's right. Yeah,
that was the no curveball year, where he continued to throw fastballs. And Beckett has a good fastball, but he doesn't have a great fastball. So
yeah, that year he had more home runs allowed than any other year, by home runs per nine.
But it was ugly.
Yeah. Anyway, so we are optimistic that Beckett can continue to pitch well, if not generating quite the same results as he has so far.
Yeah, he'll be fine. You know, he'll be, as long as he's healthy, he'll pitch fine. You know, he may not be the best pitcher on the staff like he was in the first half, but he'll pitch fine.
So going forward, we have the other ace, John Lester, who just last night was pulled from, it seems silly, everyone's calling it a no-hitter, it was four innings. So, you know, okay, fine, it was a no-hitter, but it was a four-inning no-hitter. So he was pulled after four innings. I think he had four innings, five strikeouts, one walk or no walks. He'd been pitching quite well, and they pulled him with a muscle pull in his back, and just today he went on the DL. What do you anticipate is the consequences of this?
I haven't heard the second opinion kind of stuff, the results of the MRI. It didn't seem like anyone is severely worried. You know, it's the kind of thing where maybe they just would have skipped a start if the All-Star break wasn't here.
Right.
Because he might be back the first day he's eligible, and he would have ended up only missing one start and, like, having a second pushback.
Right.
So that doesn't sound like it's anything that's a serious problem. But the Red Sox are very cautious with their starting pitchers. I mean, that's initially with Buchholz, I think he was just on kind of because they were like, well, take your 15 days and see if you feel better.
Right.
It wasn't like, oh my God, your back is going to cave in or something.
Although,
now it might.
Right.
But initially that was just like, his back didn't feel great. So they put him on the DL to give him some time.
Right.
The Red Sox are very cautious with their pitchers. So, you know, Lackey's really only going to miss one start, have a second pushback. They really can't afford to lose him. It didn't sound like it was a serious.
You said Lester?
Latissimus injury. Lester.
Okay, sorry. I thought I heard Lackey. I heard Lackey.
I might have said Lackey.
That's fine. Lester.
I was thinking about when he was put on the DL for his elbow and that came out. But either way.
Okay.
It doesn't sound like a serious. Was it a strain?
Yeah, a pull, a strain. I don't know what the technical term was.
Yes.
He was feeling pain in his back, and I think he was willing to go back out there, and the Red Sox trainer told him not to. But that, combined with the next guy I was going to bring up, has really kind of put a hurting on the bullpen. John Lackey came back from the DL, and he had a couple decent starts, and then he's kind of fallen apart again.
Well, that's a little harsh.
Okay, so no, that's fine. That's fine. Let's talk about it. So, his results have been bad, right? So we can agree his results have been bad. So, what do you think? I mean, do you think is he getting unlucky? Is he hurt? Is it a combination of those two? Is it something else?
His velocity's been there, so I don't think he's hurt.
Okay.
I'm willing to throw out the start against the Padres. Just because he was pitching fine, and then, you know, it didn't seem like he had a good grip on the ball because he just totally lost his command.
Yeah.
Or his control. Sorry, he didn't lose his command. He lost his control.
He lost everything.
Which, even Lackey, even when he's been bad, hasn't had real control problems. He's had trouble with his command. You know, he doesn't miss the strike zone. He gets way too much of it.
Well, in that case, in the Padres game, he did miss the strike zone. He walked a couple guys with the bases loaded, and then he hit a couple guys, too. So
yeah, so, I mean, I'm willing to throw that start out as he was having trouble gripping the ball, you know, came back after the delay.
Right.
Whatever. That's fine. The start against the Jays was totally inexcusable. That was all of my fastballs are catching way too much of the strike zone day.
Right.
You know, he had plenty of control. He could find the strike zone. He just kept finding it, like, letter high in the middle.
Yeah,
so,
it was kind of brutal. You could really tell Francona did not want to take him out of that game and just left him in there. I'm not trying to beat on Francona. I mean, the bullpen, obviously that's a lot of extra innings to pick up after, you know, the starter goes 2 2/3.
Yeah, I think he was just kind of really hoping that, you know, he'd give up 5 runs and then he'd settle down. But then he kept giving up more.
Yeah.
You know. So, I mean, there's no excuse for that. But, you know, he did pitch really well against the Phillies just the start before. Legitimately really well against the Phillies. And except for that Padres start and this Jays one, he's really been fine since he came back from the DL when he had the cortisone shot in his elbow.
I mean, they're going to need
to get
something.
But everyone's beating on him.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a public anger at him, you know, like, I mean, in the media and in the fans. I mean, he gets booed viciously. I feel kind of sorry for him from that standpoint.
I mean, we know I am certainly not John Lackey's biggest fan. I didn't like this contract before, you know, the ink wasn't dry. He was still at his press conference, and, you know, and I was like, oh my, this is horrible. This is awful. So I, you know, I've had a tendency to jump on him too, but it's gone to Lance where, you know, people are just completely ignoring every time he does something good, even if it is starts and starts in a row, and they're acting like, you know, before the starts, John Lackey ran over their dog.
Do you think it has to do with his contract? I mean, do you think that...
You know, some of it, probably. Some people are saying, well, he's not living up to his contract. And, you know, that's really on the Red Sox. That's not really on John Lackey. Right. I mean, yeah, he should be doing better. But, you know, if he's got this elbow problem and their answer to it was to keep him at, like, the league minimum for 2015 but have to put up with it the rest of the time, well, that's... really on them. That's
right.
Not Lackey. And I don't know if it's his elbow. I mean, it was pre-cortisone shot. So, you know, it's like we've got kind of a tale of, there's like two quarters of the season where Lackey was completely different circumstances. The one where his elbow worked and the one where it didn't. The one where his elbow worked, he's actually been pretty good. He's had one bad start.
It just
happened to be the last one. Yeah, it was awful. And before that, you know, he didn't have like good starts, but his elbow needed a cortisone shot because parts of his elbow were rubbing against each other.
Which probably, I'm just guessing now, I'm not a doctor, but I'm guessing that hurts.
Yeah, I think that might have negatively affected his performance. I'm not really sure, but, you know, it kind of sucks that we have to be in wait and see mode with Lackey, but you just have to hope that he can be average from here on out. You know, maybe he's going to have maybe he's going to be like an even higher paid Dice K for a little bit where we're going to have these good starts and then we're just going to have some bad ones. And, you know, it depends on where his command is that day.
Right.
Which is not the best, but it beats the Lackey we had in the first half. And it's a lot like the one we had last year, honestly.
Yeah, that's true. That's actually a really good point. I think, you know, myself included in this, I think a lot of people were looking, you know, at him having a quote-unquote bounce-back year this year, you know, getting better after last year. And I think now it's pretty clear that that's about the best we're going to hope for.
Yeah, I mean...
at least this year. I mean, you never know. Something could happen and he could improve next year or I don't know if he could get worse. I mean...
Oh, he could get worse. Don't tempt fate like that.
Well, in terms of I haven't checked his peripherals. My guess is he's getting unlucky as well, but at the same time, his results are pretty.
See, that's one of those things where if you look at his batting average and balls in play, I bet it's high, and you would assume he's unlucky, especially because they have a good defense.
Right.
But it's more just him putting 93 mile per hour fastballs in the middle of the strike zone, chest high, I mean, major league hitters are going to get that. Minor league hitters are going to get that.
Yeah.
If you just put the ball right there, you know, they're going to hit it. And they're probably going to make solid contact.
You know, it's funny you say that, actually, because there's a batting cage that I haven't been to it, but supposedly throws 90 miles an hour. A batting cage up near Philadelphia. And so if it's a batting cage and anybody can go and stand in against 90 miles per hour, you got to figure somebody's hitting it. Otherwise, they'd be, you know, out of business. They'd have slowed it down. So, I mean, if anybody can stand there and eventually hit a 90-mile-an-hour fastball off of a machine, you'd imagine that that would be the case in major leagues.
Yeah, I mean, if people know that, if they see that Lackey's just leaving it in the zone, you know, everyone's gonna go back to the dugout high-fiving hitters who are still yet to go up.
Right, right. So I guess as far as Lackey goes, and the Red Sox win, yay. We can sort of hope that A, he stays healthy, and B, he...
I noticed that your game day started playing. Or is that mine?
I think it's yours.
Oh, I thought that was you.
Oh, I don't hear it.
Authenticity, people. Oh, you didn't hear that? Wow, that was weird.
This wasn't in the script.
Oh, so did that not go through on the podcast?
I don't know. I didn't hear anything.
All right, well, people listening, I wasn't, like, imagining something. But, you know, after game day finishes and it starts, like, the play of the game or the last play or something.
Right.
Yeah, that video just started playing.
Mark's losing his mind, everyone. It's okay. Humor.
Totally. Move it.
I see dead games.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry.
Well, Papelbon was pitching.
Yes, yes.
Oh.
Oh, my God. So, I don't even... Yeah, don't get me started on Papelbon.
Happy thoughts. And Andrew Miller.
Oh, yeah, to Andrew Miller. So, well, hold on. So, right now we've got Beckett, who hopefully will be back and healthy and perform at a high level. We've got Lester, who, again, about the same thing, should be back and healthy and performing at a high level. We've got Lackey, who, honestly, who the hell knows, but hopefully he's healthy. Hopefully he's at least league average. Am I right with that?
Yeah, okay. I mean, it stinks, but let's just hope for 2010 again. You know, as a fifth starter, that's fine. That's perfectly fine.
Right, so ignore the money people and just, you know, hope for a fill-in performance from Lackey. And then after that, you know, we lost Matsuzaka to Tommy John surgery, definitely for the year, probably for longer, but at least as far as this year is concerned, he's not coming back. So then to fill in for Matsuzaka, we had Wakefield and Aceves, and now we have Andrew Miller on top of that. What's the future looking like here, Mark, in terms of who's going to be in the rotation long term and who's in the bullpen and that sort of thing?
Well, Aceves is the clear bullpen guy at this point. You know, the year started, Andrew Miller was really kind of the seventh option. The eighth option. Because they had Wakefield as the sixth guy and Aceves as the seventh guy, and they really wanted to have Miller work on his stuff down in Pawtucket,
right?
In the hopes that he would figure something out. But now that Miller looks like he has figured something out, you know, we don't entirely know yet. It's been three starts
against bad competition too.
Against bad team, you know, bad National League teams,
major league teams though. So
yeah,
it's not minor league. Yeah, okay.
You know, he faced those teams back when he was with the Marlins and he was terrible. So
yeah.
You know, this is possibly good.
He's pitched against the Twins before and done badly, so yeah.
But he's the real fifth starter now. You know, he's moved up the depth chart. He is the guy replacing Matsuzaka. You know, unless he completely falls apart,
right?
In which case, then you know you're going to have to rely on Wakefield once Buchholz comes back.
And there's the man that I didn't bring up yet.
Well, we still don't really know what his deal is,
right? He actually reported, I think I heard yesterday on the Red Sox broadcast, they said that he is still dealing with pain in his back. I forget if it's a muscle pull. Is that right?
Well, he went to get the second opinion today, and he's back. But there were supposed to be no reports until after the game, which is convenient because, you know.
I think it was a third opinion.
Really?
Yeah. He was in North Carolina to meet with some doctor down there, but I believe they did. The Red Sox medical staff, and then someone else in Boston.
Well, based on the Red Sox medical staff's history, we don't even count them as a first opinion.
Oh, that's
just
brutal.
Take whatever they say and go to your next guy, and that's your actual first opinion.
It's. Do you ever see that IKEA commercial a long time ago where the little kid's dressed in a doctor's like coat, and he's got two cookies, and he said, "Take two of these and call me in the morning."
That sounds about right.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I love almost every.
What was that that I just heard?
I don't know.
You're drinking straight from the vodka bottle?
No, it's the bottom of a beer.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, I'm not. Plus vodka, really?
I don't know. That's what it sounded like. I can hear well. So anyway, Buchholz. Yeah. So Buchholz, they said that he on a pain scale of 1 to 10, 1 being doesn't really hurt, and 10 mm-hmm. being excruciating pain. When he throws, he feels an 8.
Oh, sweet.
So that is, I'm going to go ahead and say, officially not good.
That is bad, yes.
I mean, on the plus side, it wasn't a 9, but still.
Hey, at least he admitted it, and like Josh Beckett.
I guess.
That's a start.
So here's something for you, Mark. The trade deadline is coming up, and we've got these pitchers dealing with, either, I don't know what you want to call it, really minor injuries or not, but they're, you know, we got 3 guys on the disabled list. Beckett's not on the disabled list anymore. But 3 guys dealing with minor injuries, guys who are expected to really carry the Red Sox pitching-wise this year. Is there anybody that you think the Red Sox should go get? Is there anyone that you've heard the Red Sox are going to get or anything along those lines?
Pitching, right?
Yeah, pitching.
I totally just brain farted there.
No,
yeah. There's really no one. There's really no one to get. It's a really pitching thin market this year. You know, 2 of the most attractive options are guys who are under contract for next year, which is not something Boston needs. I mean, you know, if Andrew Miller had totally fallen on his face in his first 3 starts and looked like a total competitor for a spot in the rotation in 2012, you know, maybe we'd be able to talk about someone like Brett Myers or Derek Lowe. But they're both owed quite a bit of money, and the Red Sox are kind of looking forward to some of the money that comes off the books next year so they can use it elsewhere. And
so there, you don't anticipate that happening?
I just don't think there's really anyone to get, you know, other than Lowe and Myers, who are both under contract next year. You're talking about, like, Jason Marquise, who is, I mean, I don't have to say it. He's Jason Marquise.
Right.
That's it.
So, two things then. One is seems like a fair amount of stock to be placing in 3 Andrew Miller starts. I mean, you're expecting him to continue pitching like a fifth starter going forward.
Well, he'll have a couple more starts this month. And, right. I mean, they're looking at more than just the results. They want to see the way he's, you know, if he's attacking the strike zone, if his stuff is real good. I mean, those have been the keys with him. Is he's not utilizing his stuff in the past. He's not attacking the zone like he has the kind of stuff he does. So if he's pitching tentatively, you know, you're going to have a problem with him. So there's more to look at it than just the number of starts. It's really the way he's pitching.
Okay.
Because he has the stuff and always has to succeed the major leagues. He just wouldn't use it.
Okay. So, I guess what I'm saying is, though, it's sort of a rock and a hard place. You've got this guy who has, you know, as you said, pitched well over 3 starts, and you know, he's obviously got the skills to succeed at the major league level. I mean, we're not necessarily talking about him being an ace, but you know, just to exist passably in the back end of the Red Sox rotation. But then you've sort of got a limited time line which you're dealing with here, because, you know, a lot of these guys are not going to be available after July 31st. And now that I say that, I kind of wonder, well, wait a minute. Maybe a guy like Lowe would be available.
Yeah, if the Braves could dump his contract in August and pass him through waivers, you know, then he'd be available.
Right.
You know, it's not like the Rays are gonna steal him if they're 3rd in the AL East. They're not going to want Derek Lowe in the rotation. A, they have no place for him, and B, he'd account for like 1/3 of their payroll.
Yeah,
actually a fourth of their payroll, I believe.
Well, yeah,
I think they're at 42 this year.
He's making 15 this year, but
yeah,
obviously that would only be, you know, part of it. They wouldn't. I mean, they wouldn't be responsible for all 15 since.
But he'd be under contract next year.
Right.
So, you know, I don't think anyone's going to come in and block that. And you know what? If the Red Sox are in first place in August, then they probably aren't having any problems in their rotation and don't really need Derek Lowe. So, okay, Yankees, go ahead and claim him.
Right, right.
So he's got the kind of salary and contract where he's, you know, he would pass through waivers until someone who actually wanted him could take him. Someone might claim him. You know, someone could claim him in the hopes of stalling him and setting back the waiver clock. But then you might get in a situation like where the Giants did last year with Cody Ross, where, you know, there were rumors that they didn't actually want him. They were just blocking him from going to the Padres. And then the Marlins said, oh, you can have him. You know, they didn't want to work out a trade. They just went, oh, weird. He's owed a couple million dollars and he's arbitration eligible next year for a raise. So he's yours. Go ahead.
Right, right, right.
Enjoy.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, it ended up working out well for the Giants, but there was this whole kind of, we didn't want to have you on the roster moment.
Right.
So, they may be able to sneak one of those guys through, but I don't, you know, we have a couple more starts in July for Miller. And if he doesn't work out, yeah, you might be able to sneak a guy through in August. And that's probably more likely for them to try and grab one of those guys at that point. Because then, you're down to the wire and they're done looking at the stuff. Or maybe they'll try and bring up someone from the minors, although they're really kind of running out of people who can pitch who are down there.
Right, so that brings up the next guy who I've been hearing a lot about is Kyle Weiland. Apparently, his stuff has improved. I don't know if he's added a new pitch or not, but he's been pretty effective down in AAA. Do you think he could come in and, if need be, step into the rotation, or is he a bullpen guy?
That's a tough question with him. Well, it's going to be one of those things where we kind of won't know until we see. You know, if he gets a chance. I think he can get major league hitters out. I don't know if he'll do it as a starter.
Okay.
I don't know if he can. His stock has gone up this year, for sure. He was kind of a fringe starter, possibly a reliever kind of guy heading into the year. But he's done so well at AAA this year, and his stuff has looked really good. He might be a back-end guy. So maybe in a pinch, he can make a couple of starts. Long-term as a starter in Boston, probably not. I mean, There's nowhere for him next year, first of all.
True. Well, we do have an open spot now with, with Matsuzaka out.
But you know, if Andrew Miller is working, then they're not gonna move him because
you love yourself some Andrew Miller. Don't you?
No, if he's working, you know, if he does well, they're not gonna bump him for Weiland. They would move.
Oh sure, yeah.
They would move Weiland to the bullpen. They would just go with the plan as it is. You know, he's a starter right now, so he has more opportunities to learn how to pitch.
Okay.
He's not going to learn what he needs to learn as a reliever down there. So chances are good that, you know, they're going to leave him as a starter this year for as long as they can. Probably switch him to the bullpen either next year in the spring or late this year, you know, as a September call-up or maybe a late August call-up so that they could have him in the playoff roster if necessary. But I think that's the kind of thing that's going to be his role.
Okay.
You know, it's different than like Michael Bowden, who failed as a starter so had to become a reliever. This is more like his career path is as a potentially really good reliever. They're just giving him more time, more innings to work things out before he gets to the majors.
I see. Is there any chance that the Sox could go after a guy like Hiroki Kuroda?
He's going to be popular because he's one of the only people on the trade market who looks good. And because of that, you know, the Dodgers will probably ask for maybe not a ton, but enough to keep the Red Sox from being interested.
Although, keep in mind who will be asking.
Yeah, but someone else is going to, you know, I mean, there's so many teams who are going to need pitching, and if only one team is offering a legitimate pitcher July 31st, you know, is going to make a deal. You know, not everyone's going to try and fool Coletti. They're just, someone's going to say, hey, please take this. It's good. I promise.
Right, right.
And it'd actually be real. Not be a lie like that time. Here's Octavio Dotel. Please give us your pitching prospect.
You know, I just pulled him up on Cott's contracts, and he has a no trade clause.
He does, because he really wanted to pitch in L.A. I mean, it was almost no question. I wanted him in Boston this winter to be signed as a free agent, and Matsuzaka either traded or moved to the pen. I remember I wrote a few things at Red Sox Beacon about that, but he just didn't, you know, he wanted to stay West Coast. He wanted to stay in Los Angeles. So it was everyone's favorite pitching prize of the offseason besides Cliff Lee.
Right.
Just,
right.
You know, he had his home picked out pretty much before the season ended.
So even if he is dealt, you don't anticipate the Red Sox going after him?
No, I just think the cost will be too high. Because of the Adrian Gonzalez trade, while the Red Sox still have prospects, they don't have a lot of high-ceiling prospects. And someone is going to give up more than the Red Sox either can or are willing to offer.
Now, allow me to make a couple small noises and then pause for a moment. So the Red Sox, I thought, did have high-ceiling prospects. They just don't have guys who are...
No one they're going to move. Let me rephrase that.
Okay, so high up in the minor leagues, guys. I mean, like obviously they're not, you know, not a Westmoreland, but like a Middlebrooks or something. I mean, he's a guy who could make a few All-Star games. Am I correct in saying that?
I mean, I like Will Middlebrooks a lot, and I think the Red Sox do too. They put him in the futures game. Usually you pick guys based in the futures game because you want to show them off, not because they're having a fantastic season. I mean, those are your real prospects.
Okay.
So that's why sometimes you see guys who don't have amazing lines, but you know,
right?
It's that's who you're showing off. So if the Red Sox picked him as one of their two guys for the futures game, they think pretty highly of him. I don't think they would do anything like that, especially not for a midseason rental like Carota. Who?
Oh yeah, no. I'm not saying they should trade him. I was just wondering if he had a high ceiling or not, or if he's just a guy who.
No, he does.
Who maybe I thought too much of. Anyway, that's all. Sorry.
No, it's okay. I just don't think they have. I mean, if Kalish was healthy, maybe they would move Reddick in a midseason deal if it would really make them better this year or next year. Kalish isn't healthy. And Drew isn't performing. And Darno McDonald is not going to get it done. So you almost can't move him unless you're going to get an outfielder back. But that,
right.
You know, then you start getting more complicated. They have to get one deal done before they can get another deal. And then.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
And while they can add money, I don't think they can go and I don't think they're going to go and add Carota's contract and Beltran's contract and, you know, trade someone inexpensive and make Drew a fifth outfielder. And there's a lot of moving parts that would have to happen for that to work.
Right. And yeah, that's and like you said, considering the sort of the lack of high end prospects at the upper reaches of the minor leagues, it's probably unlikely.
Lars Anderson was hitting. You know, this would be so easy to solve because it's like, well, they don't need a first baseman.
Right.
If something happened to Gonzalez, you know, God forbid, they could always move Euculus there again. So.
I blame this all on Jason Place. It's all his fault.
I don't know. That seems harsh. Poor Jason.
Anyway. So you want to, should we take a break and then bring on our guest?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, so we will take a short break, and we'll be back with our guest, Daniel Moraes. I hope I'm saying that his name correctly, of Camden Crazies and Beyond the Box Score, which a website that I think Mark knows a little bit about. So we'll take a quick break, and we will be right back. I'll let you take the credit for the things that everyone else made. Hey, did you hear the news? God hates the blues, but it's all. Okay, welcome back. We have with us Daniel Moraes from Camden Crazies. He also writes for Beyond the Box Score. Hey, Daniel, how's it going?
Good, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. And, of course, Mark is still here. What's up, Mark?
Drinking.
the last 10 minutes have been very rough for Mark. He's already hitting the bottle pretty hard.
We take, like, a minute and a half long breaks. And he tries to make it sound like I get drunk during every break. I get drunk during the podcast, during breaks.
No, you do shots during the break.
I get more beer during the break.
It's pretty brutal. I can hear the little shot glasses hitting the floor.
Then I don't have any shot glasses.
All right. So, Daniel, you are an Orioles fan. Is that correct?
Yeah.
What were we going to do if he said no? We were going to be like, oh... Ooh.
Yeah, I think at that point it would be the end of the podcast.
Well, it was nice talking to you, but we need an Orioles fan. Do you know one?
Moving on, yeah.
They're down 13-5 in Texas at the moment, so...
So you're not feeling particularly loyal?
No, I'm loyal. Okay. If we are still here at this point, I think you have to say we're pretty loyal.
Yeah, that's true. The Orioles have not exactly had the best last decade plus. How is this year's team doing overall, would you say?
They're better, but still fifth place and deservedly so in the AL East, so they're not good.
What? Why not? Listen to my penetrating question.
Why?
Yeah.
They can't pitch, and they don't field, and a lot of the guys don't hit.
Oh.
So those are like the three big things you got to do.
Yeah.
To win some ball games, and when you're not doing any of them, makes it a little bit tough.
How's their clubhouse chemistry?
I think it's fantastic. You know, other than the losing attitude, the culture of losing.
Uh-huh.
But they've got some jokesters, maybe, and
ooh.
I don't know. You know,
people keeping it loose.
That's right. Got to keep it loose. I wonder if the
I'm not sure Buck is really a keep it loose kind of guy.
No, he strikes me as kind of a everything that just came to mind was really inappropriate.
He's actually, from what I heard, he has an amazing sense of humor. He can really turn any situation into just a laugh fest.
I've heard some things I'm really not supposed to talk about. None of them are flattering.
I haven't heard anything, so I'm just making things up. Yeah,
we can keep making things up because.
Yeah, well, that's sort of where I'm going. What do you think of Showalter, Daniel? Sorry, I'm throwing this at you.
I think he's an okay manager. He does a lot of stuff I disagree with. His pitcher usage is not fantastic, but by major league standards, I think he's fine, maybe a little above average. So
he's not what you would call the problem.
Well, no.
Okay.
He's not the problem. They could probably improve marginally by getting as good of a manager as you could hope for. But I think a lot of what he does is behind the scenes anyway, and I'm in no position to judge that. So.
Yeah, I mean, that always seems to be his thing where, you know, you bring him in with a team of, like, younger guys who aren't used to winning, and you kind of just let him work it out until he can make them win or until he gets fired. But usually it's turned into until he can make them win.
That would be good. I would like to see that. See him pull that trick here.
He already did. Second half last year. That was the whole thing.
Yeah, all done.
It's over.
Is that all we get?
That's it.
They should have
hired him earlier.
Yeah, well, or later. They should have waited to start him this season.
There you go. Would have won 140 games.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
You know, the pitch. You said that the team's not pitching, but that's actually kind of a surprise, especially since they started the year with Zach Britton in the rotation. But things have just not gone well for what was supposed to be a pretty good pitching staff.
Well, they were supposed to have a lot of young guys, and, you know, when you have a group of young pitchers, not all of them are going to work out. And at this point, Britton is the only one who's really working out, which is surprising since he wasn't even supposed to be in the rotation to start the year. Chris Tillman's fastball has dropped like 5 miles an hour since he was a prospect. He's getting knocked around in AAA. Mattis was hurt for a long time. He came back. His fastball's down to like 86. He got knocked around, sent to the minors, and his first start in the minors, he got knocked around again. Brad Bergeson stopped getting ground balls. He's in the bullpen now, getting knocked around. So you've got Guthrie, who's fine, but not the guy you want leading the rotation. He's a solid pitcher, but, you know, not an ace, certainly.
Yeah, he's like a fourth, fifth starter trade acquisition kind of guy, not a guy you want a rebuilding team full of young guys.
I wouldn't go fifth starter, but on a good team, he's probably a number four.
Yeah.
You know, actually, Mark, that brings up an interesting point because we didn't think of him in the last.
Well, yeah, because I don't want him.
Oh.
Fenway's a little too cozy for that.
Okay, sorry. Moving on. Sorry to interrupt you, Daniel.
That's fine. I mean, I assume this is a trade. Thing.
Yeah, we were talking about guys the Red Sox may or may not want to add, and quite honestly, we really weren't successful bringing up anybody who A, they could afford, and B, they would want.
Right. I mean, the trading Guthrie, I think, is going to be hard because for most teams that are looking to add a starter, he's a number three, maybe four starter on in their rotation. That's where they would slot him in.
Right.
But to the Orioles, he's a clear number one. So there's a disparity in value there.
Well, there is.
To the Orioles, to another team. So not that I don't think they should trade him. I just don't think they will trade him.
Well, there's that whole thing about we finished, you know, last with you. We can finish last without you.
Well, they don't really have that attitude.
Oh.
I don't think, given their moves, all offseason and even into the season, seems like their goal is to get to 500, and that's what they're, you know, they signed Vlad Guerrero, taking away playing time from Nolan Reimold and Felix Piet, not because they thought we can finish last with either guy and let's see
right.
if Vlad Guerrero has something left. It's because they thought Vlad Guerrero was still pretty good and he was going to help him get to 500. I think that was misguided. I think a lot of people, I don't think you guys would disagree with that, that was not likely to be a good decision. And it has turned out to be a poor decision. It took a while for everyone else to catch on to that.
But in fairness, nobody saw that coming. Nobody saw that coming, though.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I mean, you kind of... Go ahead.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. I don't think anyone saw him being this bad, but I think plenty of people saw him not being a huge improvement for the team over what other guys could do.
No, again, I try to joke, but no, I think you're right. They definitely... It seems like the Orioles are one of those teams where they try to go for it, you know, metaphorically speaking, every year. And it, you know, to bring up another team from even a different sport, it, you know, like the Redskins, you know, they're generally terrible and are constantly signing guys in attempt to be not terrible, and it doesn't ever work. Although that's probably overly harsh. I don't know.
I don't follow the Redskins. Closely,
that's for the better.
But that's the description does not sound too different.
Okay.
Experience here.
Are you generally, you know, optimistic still about the? I mean, I'm guessing that if we had talked to you on April 1st, you know, you might have said, well, maybe they can make 500. They're probably not going to do much better than that. I doubt you would have said, and again, I'm putting words in your mouth, so sorry. You can tell me if I'm wrong here, but I'm guessing you wouldn't have thought they were going to make the playoffs, meaning that this would probably be a year that would be, you know, a learning year where results would be not unimportant, certainly, but not, you know, but years to for young arms to learn the what is required to be in the major leagues and to improve and look towards next year. Is that correct?
That is correct. That's about it. I think of all the Orioles bloggers and whoever, I had them with the lowest win total, which was 76. And I felt a little bit shaky with 76. When I put in the numbers, it was coming out like 78, 79. And I was, no, this team is not that good. I bumped it down to 76 artificially. And I was still feeling a little shaky about that. But they've even underperformed that. So I definitely did not think the playoffs were – that was a pipe dream. The people who thought that must be really disappointed right now. 500 outside chance, but at this point that's looking not likely at all.
Right.
I had them for just around 500. I mean, I even went out of my way to write an article saying that they were probably better than the 2006 Cardinals, although – So we're like four or five teams every year.
Right.
More than that, probably.
Us three might be better than the 06 Cardinals.
Yeah.
God, I think that's my least favorite team of all time. I hate the 06 Cardinals. Violently hate them to the point where I may start swearing.
Let's not talk. It's 2006, man. It's just not a good year. Let's not talk about it anymore.
No, it was bad in so many ways. Very upsetting.
Moving on to non-
2006
related
right.
items.
Yes, please.
Is Luke Scott moving this deadline?
He's hurt.
How hurt is he?
There's a chance he'll miss the rest of the season.
Oh, that's really hurt.
Yeah.
That's way more hurt than I thought he was.
Dr. Normandin, everyone.
Quickly, Matt, edit this entire portion of the podcast that. Out.
I don't want to say that's a certainty, but there is a chance of that. I think there's virtually no chance he gets dealt.
The like Orioles traded him last year,
or the year before, which not a few people advocated. There was no reason for them to hang on to him. His production was only going to go down in his mid-30s. His salary was going up. It was silly to keep him on the team, frankly.
But he's such a classy guy.
Oh, yeah. I divorced that from his production on the field, but that would not make me personally sad to see him go.
I can't imagine. Yeah.
So, I don't know what deals were out there, but I have to think there was something from somebody that was worth moving for some young player. The Rays had to have offered their 15th best prospect, you know, so that the Orioles are going to get nothing out of him probably at this point is pretty disappointing.
Well, yeah, I mean, what did he be at most? The type B free agent? Probably maybe not even that if he misses most of this year.
Yeah. I mean, it depends because he was a DH last year and he's played outfield this year. I'm not sure how those rules work.
I don't know if anybody knows how those rules work.
MLB Trade Rumors has supposedly reverse engineered the Elias rankings, but I know they just posted something a couple days ago saying that they had to redo it, or I don't know. So, who the hell knows?
Only Elias knows.
Yeah.
I think type B at maximum is realistic. And then you have to offer him arbitration. And I don't know if he's even a free agent. I think he might still have one more year, I want to say.
Oh, geez.
Of, you know, arbitration years where even if he's not making what he would make on the free, you know, on the free agent market, it's probably not worth signing him to what it would take to get him from arbitration.
Hmm.
I was a big fan when they traded for him. They traded Miguel Tejada to Houston for a package of players, and he was kind of an afterthought there because he was a part-time outfielder. People didn't think he could hit left-handed pitching and whatnot. I was excited. Here's a guy with power who will walk, who the defensive numbers said he was a decent outfielder. And left field for the Orioles had been terrible for years at that point. I was really excited to get him, so I was a big fan for a long time. But they definitely needed to trade him at some point.
He has 4.1 years of major league service, according to Kotz contracts.
Be heading into this year.
I assume so. I don't know. I was going to say, yeah. I don't know how they do that on that site. But
that sounds right. So it's one more year after this one.
Right. I guess they missed their window with that.
Yep.
The entire organization does seem to be good at shooting itself in the foot. And then, on the other hand, they seem to get unlucky in some instances as well. I mean, they've had some guys like, the one guy who springs to mind is Matt Wieters. You know, a guy who people seem to, you know, think was Joe Mauer, was, you know, the consensus, very clear best guy in the, I don't know if you remember the best guy in the draft. I think he was. I think he was the guy everyone wanted to take first, and he didn't get picked first. Is that correct?
He didn't get picked until the fifth, I think.
Because
I don't think he was the consensus top.
No. Okay.
I think he was potentially one of the top guys and should have definitely been picked number four by the Pirates, but they passed on him to pick Daniel Moskis, the, I guess, now left-handed reliever.
But I was going to say, but in fairness, that's worked out really well for them.
Yeah. So, but I don't think he was, like, far and away the top guy in the draft that fell all the way to five.
Right. Okay.
He fell 4 to 5, certainly, but it was an easy pick for the Orioles at that point.
You're just thinking of baseball prospectus, totally overrating him.
Well, I could be, and they clearly did. They obviously didn't carry the one or something. But
they carried a lot of ones. They carried far too many ones.
But his minor league numbers were amazing, and right. He was a catcher. So I can understand, without a reality check there, how that came about.
But he really hasn't. I mean, he's certainly not been bad, and especially by the standards of a catcher, you know, he's been, you know, an acceptable. I don't know, actually. I should I should ask you because, A, you're the expert, and B, you're our guest. But I guess, how has he performed, and has he lived up to expectations?
I don't think he's lived up to expectations. Obviously, Maurer with power, that's pretty high expectations. If Joe Maurer is a Hall of Fame caliber catcher, expecting that plus power is a little bit ridiculous. So he hasn't come along with the bat as quickly as a lot of people had hoped. I thought there was going to be an adjustment period just being a catcher and coming to the majors and having to learn things aside from hitting the pitching. I didn't think it was going to take this long, but this year he's about a league average hitter, which is pretty good for a catcher. And he's also a Gold Glove caliber catcher. So that's a valuable player.
Sure.
It's just not as flat, nearly as flashy as we expected. And it's not it's not really good enough for what the Orioles need from him. But I'm not going to put that on him. He's probably the team's best player.
So. He's thrown out 44% of runners this year.
Is he really?
Yeah. Yep.
He's really good. I really enjoy it when teams try to run on him because it's like free outs on the bases.
Zero passed balls.
Yeah. No, he's...
He's only given up five in his career.
Since his rookie year, he worked on his footwork or something. He's always had a really strong arm, but throwing out runners, blocking the plate, on plays of the plate in the field, he's gotten much better. He's a really good defensive catcher.
Which is surprising because a lot of people thought that his body might keep him from being a really great defensive catcher, and it was kind of assumed that it was a sure thing that he would hit. So it's strange that it's kind of completely gone on its head where now he's worked to become a fantastic defensive catcher. And, you know, he's a good hitter for a catcher, but we're not really sure just how good a hitter he's going to end up being.
Right.
Do you think that, Daniel, that maybe he's put too much effort into his defense at the expense of his offense? I mean, it's got to be tough to come up and have to handle a pitching staff and learn how to catch. I mean, apparently that's quite a... quite something to leap over. You think that he's focused too much on defense at the expense of offense?
Possible. I mean, I don't know.
You can make something up. That's fine.
Totally unsubstantiated. Just go with it.
No,
I don't. Perhaps he could have spent more time in the batting cages instead of working with the coaches on his throwing or whatever. I really don't know. I mean, he's got, at the plate, he's still got a lot of the tools. He has power. I think he has a chance to hit 30 home runs one year if things go right and he puts the bat on the ball and all that. I don't know if we'll ever see it, but I think he's got the tools to do it. So it might just take a while for him to get everything in place on that side of the ball.
Okay.
You know, from the times I've seen him, and I've seen him live a few times as well. When he really gets, like, he has a great swing when everything comes together, and it's amazing. The ball just rockets off of his bat when he really puts a good swing on the ball. But then there are these other times where, you know, he'll swing at some awful pitch and he'll make weak contact. And I mean, it's like kind of a Jekyll and Hyde thing with him. He just hasn't been very consistent. And I mean, I understand what you say when you say he has the tools there, because there's sometimes where you see him and you're amazed that he just doesn't hit better than he does.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes he'll come up to the plate and he looks like he has a plan and he'll take pitches and wait for a good pitch to hit. And sometimes he goes up hacking. So we see it in bits and pieces enough that if you put everything together, I'm not going to say he's an MVP candidate, but he would be a very good player. The question is if he's ever going to put everything together at the same time, and, you know, who knows.
He's still pretty young, isn't he?
Yeah, 25, I think.
That's what I was thinking. I mean, yeah, it sounds like there's still development to be had there. And if there's any position, you know, on the field, not non-pitcher division, that, you know, is slow to develop, it's catching. It's one of the reasons I was excited about the Red Sox getting Santalamacchia.
Yeah, that was a good pickup.
Thank you. I did it myself.
Jason Veritek.
I'm impressed.
Jason Veritek didn't really get a real start until he was 27 in 1999, if we're going to keep it just a Boston comparison there. Say what you want about him being overrated and all that, but he's had a pretty good career, especially for a guy who didn't really get going until he was 27.
Yeah.
And there was a time when he was a fantastic defender as well. So, you know, sometimes it just takes a while for these guys, especially at catcher.
And Veritek's going to be a Hall of Famer too. So,
don't even get me started.
Oh, man.
I'm so glad our community just collectively shot that down. I'm so proud of everyone.
Was that a real thing?
Yeah, it was.
Nesson today asked, and they basically made an excuse for him, trying to say like all those catchers with better numbers, they just, you know, it was a different time.
Yeah,
it's like, yeah, it was a time where offensive numbers weren't as good.
Okay. All right.
It's hard to understand the reverence with which Jason Veritek is held by certain segments of Red Sox fandom.
There are people who, while Victor Martinez was here, wanted Jason Veritek to be the starting catcher. So
yeah.
We're not talking about a few people. Like, this was loud enough that I could hear it, and I usually put my hands over my ears and, you know, try not to hear any of that.
Yeah, I believe it. I just was unaware about the Hall of Fame thing.
It was just some Nesson page views thing today with a poll. But last time I looked, like 55% of people had said yes. Yes, he belongs in the Hall of Fame.
Fortunately, though, 55% is still below the threshold that you need to get into the Hall of Fame. So
yeah, that's what I was thinking. And yeah. I was like, well, and the people voting are going to be even harder than this. So
probably, yeah.
Get off my ballot.
Yeah. Well, you have some self-selection there. The people who disagree are probably too busy laughing to click the no button.
So. Yeah, I had to go back a second time to click no. Just, like, I looked at it and was like, oh, no. And then I realized I didn't actually click no, and I should go do that because...
Exactly.
So, Daniel, I should ask you also, the trade deadline is coming up. I mean, it seems like from the standings, the Orioles are obviously not going to be buyers. Do you anticipate them, you know, making many deals? Do you think they're going to try to hold on to some guys and, you know, like you were saying before, make a push for 500? Or what do you see going forward?
It's hard to say because I don't think the GM is a stupid man.
That's a good start.
You know, I think he knows what he's doing pretty well, but all of their actions up to this point indicate that they're still trying to make a push for 500. So maybe there will be some deals. If they keep losing, that'll probably encourage them to trade players. But guys, the guys that they can trade, Vlad Guerrero, Derek Lee, they don't have any value. Kevin Gregg. So they're probably limited to trading J.J. Hardy if they don't sign him, which at this point would probably be a mistake given how well he's playing. It would be an overpay for this team. And Koji Uehara from the bullpen, maybe. So I don't think they have a lot of pieces. And then on top of that, I don't know how inclined they are to wave a white flag.
Right.
So I don't know.
Is it a worry that the fan base... You know, like they tasted a little bit of success at the end of last year, and they're afraid they're going to lose them if they show like weakness. You know what I mean?
Listening to the radio the past couple weeks, I think we're kind of at that point already, where there's not much hope left for this season from a lot of people that were excited by the finish last year. So. I'm not sure how many people are actually going to say, oh, you guys traded J.J. Hardy. I'm done with the team. That seems kind of silly.
That doesn't seem like a sentence that's ever actually been uttered in the history of English.
Right. So.
Hey, I like J.J. Hardy.
I was a huge fan. I was so excited when they traded two minor league relievers for him. That was amazing that they pulled that deal off. So they do stuff like that, but then they don't sign him to an extension right away. And now he's having such a good season, he's probably priced himself out of Baltimore.
Well, I mean, Baltimore always has money. They just, because they never get to sign anyone. All the Mark Teixeiras of the world always say no.
Sure. I mean, they could sign Harding if they give him enough money.
Yeah.
But I don't know, signing a middle infielder with injury issues who's having a career year, that doesn't really seem like something a team in the Orioles' position should be doing from my perspective.
I kind of think, like, is there anyone who's really going to compete who has kind of heavy dollars? I mean, maybe the Mets if they let Jose Reyes go. But, you know, Reyes is going to be on the market too. So Hardy's not even going to be the most attractive shortstop around.
Yeah, but I think a lot of teams are going to think, well, Jose Reyes is going to want a lot of money. J.J. Hardy's pretty good too. We might be able to get him on a deal. Mm. But enough teams might think that Hardy is going to get paid pretty well.
Well, don't forget the Yankees too, because they don't have a shortstop.
They're going to trade for Jose Reyes and sign J.J. Hardy and then start Jeter at short and play. Right. Have him lead off.
I was just going to say, and lead him off too. Why not? Do you guys know if he had four hits tonight?
No, I think he had one. I'm not sure. I know he had one. He had a hit, a double.
Oh, that's so disappointing. Yeah. It's like the ultimate non-issue. I was really hoping he would just do it really quickly before anyone noticed. And
no, I don't. I want him to do it on a day when I don't have a lot to write, because I have to do some work specifically for when he gets his 3,000th.
I'm sorry.
So, hey, it's okay.
Do you want me to write?
Yeah, my two topic ideas are kind of, they're like both praising and kind of not bashing. Bashing is a strong word.
I can be really mean if you like.
No. Oh. You know, he's got a great career, and I want to recognize that. I'm just doing some kind of like alternate reality stuff with the topics that I have for him.
What if he was picked by the Twins?
Actually, not specifically the Twins, but that's sort of kind of one of the ideas. I'm not sure which one I'm running with yet, but
okay.
Basically, you know, who is he if he's not a Yankee? You know, what would we think of him?
I think that's a really good question. Not to get off on that topic, but
no, I agree. That is interesting to consider.
So
back to J.J. Hardy before I get yelled at by my boss for disclosing my topic.
Yes. Well, I wanted to know. Also, I was looking at a bunch of stats about how the Orioles' season has gone so far, and it seems like they've got a number of guys who are a lot more was expected of, and reasonably so. I mean, you know, I think you could look at Guerrero and go, okay, you know, he's not going to be that great, but he's not going to be this bad. We didn't, you know,
right.
We think he'd be this bad. Same with Derek Lee. I mean, Lee is hitting. Has a .293 on base percentage and a .341 slugging percentage.
Hit a home run today.
Did he? Okay, so maybe it's higher than that.
Yeah, I thought Derek Lee was a really good signing. You know, I wanted him to go to the Padres originally until the Orioles came and used their money.
The Orioles and their big dollars. Brian Roberts he's still hurt, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Concussion,
okay. Right.
Yeah. Yeah,
when he was in the lineup, he did pretty badly. But the guy I'm really interested in is the guy who's played a lot, Markakis.
Oh, it kills me. That's the one that hurts the most.
I would think that would be the most painful. I mean, he's a guy who, from all as far as I can tell, he's healthy. He's in the prime of his career. And I don't know, maybe he's just being weighed down by the orange bird on his hat. I mean, do you have any idea what's wrong with him?
Some guys peak at 24. I mean, it has some players, that's when they're
that was me,
at their
actually.
Best.
I peaked at 24, too.
I better not have peaked at 24 because I'm screwed.
It's over, Mark. You're done.
Yeah,
it's been really sad to watch. Because the power is slowly going away, but then the plate discipline, which was so that one year, it was fantastic. He just would not swing at balls. He just wouldn't do it. And then the following season went right back to being okay at it. You know, when he came up, the commentators would rave. He's got such a good batting eye, and it never turned into a lot of good OBP until that one year. So I thought, oh, he's figured it out.
Right.
And now he's just going to maintain this kind of level of production. Maybe not such a high average, or as, he might not hit 30 home runs. People in Baltimore used to think he was going to hit 30 home runs regularly for some reason.
Why not?
Well, that's the next step all the time. You know, no matter how good you are or what your ceiling is, once you hit 20, you'll hit 30.
Think positive.
But I thought at least he would, if not walk that much, still walk a lot and maybe, you know, 400 on base percentage year in and year out is pretty good from a quality defensive right fielder.
Definitely.
But then that went away and his defense was never as good again, you know, according to, you know, it's hard to judge.
Right.
From my perspective, watching him, his range is okay. There's a lot of balls that fall in where I think a good right fielder gets to that. His arm is not as good as it used to be, but still pretty good. But his range is not fantastic.
Should he be a left fielder, probably?
No, I mean, I think playing him in left field might waste his arm. Right. That's probably his best defensive asset. And he's played so long in Baltimore and right field with the scoreboard there, that's probably not worth moving him. And it's not as if the team has a right fielder to put there anyway. But
well, Vlad Guerrero used to play right. Put him there. Come on. Ron Washington would do it.
I was going to say, it's not like they have a left fielder either. It's not like...
Yeah.
Listen to the walk rates here. His rookie year in 2006, 7.9%, then 8.6%, then in 2008, 14.2%. That was the year he basically did 300, 400, 500. Then the next year it dropped by half, 7.9%. Last year 10.3%, and this year 5.9%. So he had the first 3 years there was a definite upward trend, and it was showing in, you know, his on base percentage and slugging percentage too. And now then he sort of just fell off in 2009, and it's kind of bounced around below that previous mark.
The funny thing is that if you look at his strikeout rates, they track with how his career has gone. They go up until they peak in 2008, right, and then go back down. So
that's true.
At some point, I'd hypothesized that maybe in an effort to cut down his strikeouts, because I remember in 2008, there was a minorly big deal being made about how often he was striking out. Because he struck out over 100 times in 2007 and 2008. And so I thought maybe he's trying to strike out less, you know,
right,
making contact and all that. And I asked him a question about it at the Fan Fest this year. And he said, no, he never really thinks about he never tried to cut down on his strikeouts. He just kind of – he doesn't try to go to the opposite field. He just hits the ball where it's pitched. So I don't know what he's doing up there. But the numbers indicate that he's striking out a lot less, and it's made him a worse player.
Dan Uggla's kind of doing something similar. I mean, he's been a little aggressive trying to cut down on his strikeouts, but it's really cut into his walks, and he's making more contact, but he's making poor contact.
Yeah, Uggla's batting average on balls in play, is that over 200 yet?
I don't know, but, you know, I mean, there's unlucky and there's horrible approach, and he might have more of the latter than the former. You know, if he's just swinging at everything early in the hopes of avoiding a strikeout so he can ground out to second base, then...
Right. Yeah.
It is 190. His BABIP.
Wow.
190.
I mean...
But he's only signed for 5 years, so... I think, you know...
Well, hopefully... They have to hope that's mostly bad luck and not so much bad approach, but there has to be at least some bad luck and... That is really low.
That looks amazing. Like a lot of bad approach, though. So
that's real. Yeah, I mean that is the outer edge of crazy. You know, assuming it. I mean, if he's hitting the ball as hard like he normally does, that's several bounds beyond nuts.
So hey, Daniel, Markakis could be a 31-year-old second baseman who is, you know, not good at the position, signed to a long-term deal. Things could be a lot worse.
Yeah, that one was... The thing about the Orioles, I was telling somebody earlier, is that a lot of these things that have happened that have turned out badly didn't turn out badly unexpectedly. Like, signing Vlad, you could see that that was not a good idea beforehand.
Right.
Giving up a draft pick and giving 2 years to Mike Gonzalez seemed like a pretty terrible idea. And, you know, it turned out not well. Giving 2 years to Kevin Gregg for some reason.
Proven closer.
So terrible. And like, so Brian Roberts, who I'm assuming is who you're referring to there, giving him a 4-year extension at his age for a second baseman did not seem like a good idea at the time.
I wasn't referring to that at all, but now that you mention it, I mean, yes, that's what I was alluding to, Brian Roberts' contract.
Very well done, Mark. Very well done.
I have paid for him in fantasy the last 2 years, and I blame myself for everything. So I'd like to publicly apologize to you, Daniel, for destroying Brian Roberts' career.
Well, yeah, you apologize to the whole city for that then, because he has been a fan favorite for a long time.
Let them know. Just tell them for me.
Yeah, I guess he's old. You said 31. He's older than that at this point.
It's amazing how quick second basemen, even when they're athletic and speedy, just kind of fall off.
It's middle infielders, really. I mean, second baseman, but yeah,
shortstops can become second baseman,
right?
You know, when their range and their speed goes down, where does second baseman go? Besides, like the
shortstop.
Garbage,
shortstop.
You know, they're already kind of defective in some way. So,
are you calling Dustin Pedroia defective?
He will be at some point. Like when his extension runs out, you might have to go.
Never.
You know, it's one of those things.
I'm waiting around for him to get 3,000 hits.
It's not going to happen, man. I love Dustin Pedroia, but
3,000 hits countdown. You're gonna
start
have to,
it right now.
Yeah, you're gonna have to write an article about what would happen if he was drafted by the Tigers.
Yeah, I completely forgot that they signed Roberts to that 4-year deal. When did they sign him to that?
Oh man,
when the trouble started.
He has 2 years left.
So, yeah, right when the trouble started.
Yeah, and it was an extension. So he actually wasn't a free agent, I don't believe, at the time. He had one more year left.
Why do teams do that?
I don't know. I mean, it makes sense if it's a young guy who's still in his arbitration years.
Right.
Yeah.
Before his arbitration years. But, like, with Ryan Howard, it makes no sense. You know.
Oh, yeah, that's my favorite contract of all time.
Showing loyalty to the player who's not going to be any good for most of the extension you didn't have to give to him.
that you gave to him at above market rates.
He'll be really happy during those years when he is driving everyone insane.
Right.
And that's what matters.
They gave Roberts $10 million a year, which wasn't, at the time, it wasn't terrible.
Yeah, I mean, that's not terrible money at all.
The following year is when the rate for free agents fell from like 4.5 million to 4 million instead of going up to 5 million as was expected at the time.
Right.
So that made the contract look a lot worse. And then he's gotten hurt much more than expected. Like the concussion thing is kind of fluky. The other issues he's had are legitimate issues.
Yeah, the back, right?
Yeah. Mostly. Oh, yeah. Middle infielder over 30 with a back injury is obviously a recipe for success. So,
sign him to another extension.
Right now at $25 million. Yeah.
With all the rest he's getting right now, he'll be like a spring chicken by the time he's 35 and able to play.
He's a community, you know. He has roots in the community or something. He's in a lot of the team's commercials. Fan favorite. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to ask you if the Orioles would be smart to like move Nick Markakis, but you know, same thing. Like he's not going anywhere.
Frankly, at this point, it's probably not smart.
You'd be selling low on him, but...
Yeah, you'd get nothing back. Given his contract, I don't think you get anything.
What is he signed for?
It's like $12 million a year.
Let's see.
Or something along those lines. $13
million. Somebody said, take your checkbook.
6 years, $66 million. He's got... wow, this goes on for a while. Next year, $12 million. 2013, $15 million. 2014, $15 million.
Did anyone else hear that? I didn't hear that. You were...
What? Mark?
Did everyone else hear all that? Because you sounded like a robot. A slow motion robot.
Really?
Yeah.
Do I still sound like a robot?
No.
They're good now.
Well, that's weird.
Yeah, so so he signed for a long time for a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah. $12 million next year, $15 million, $15 million, and then a club option for $17.5 million in 2015.
What's the buyout on that?
$18 million.
The buyout is not $18 million.
No, it's not. That was a joke. $2 million.
That's not too bad.
So, well, it's not, the buyout's not too bad, but he's due $43 million, I think, $44 million over the next 3 years.
Why are you trying to depress Daniel?
No, I'm aware of all these things.
Why do you have to remind him?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Daniel.
Like, the hope now, I guess, is that he doesn't decline enough where his contract is actually a burden. He can realistically play at a level where that contract is not bad.
Yeah, I mean, he can be a 3-win player still, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's not unreasonable. The issue is trying to trade a 3-win player who's making $15 million, you're not going to get anything for that.
Yeah, I forgot about the extension, so...
I was so happy when they signed him to that extension because it came right after the 2008 season.
Ugh.
And I was thinking, it's going to be a steal. He's going to put up a 400 on base percentage every year. It's going to be fantastic. And just immediately was not good.
So strange. Daniels, the Orioles are, I've always kind of seen as, right along with the Blue Jays, as kind of sleeping giants in the AL East. I mean, the Red Sox and Yankees get all the press, and everyone thinks that they're the ones. I mean, well, the Yankees obviously have a giant payroll. The Red Sox do too. But the Orioles could really support a payroll, of, if they had a good team, they could put a pretty big payroll. They could probably support a pretty big payroll along with the Blue Jays. I mean,
yeah, no, that's definitely true. If they were in a position where this year things went as the team expected and they won 82, 83 games, they could go out and sign Prince Fielder. They could afford that in the budget, and it might make sense to do at that point. The problem is that as bad as the team is, sinking $20-plus million in a player doesn't make any sense. And the extensions they've given their own players have not turned out well. So even if they could theoretically spend all that money, they're not really in a position to do it well or do it in the free agent market at this time. So it's tough.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think having the Nationals in Washington, has that hurt the team's fan base or income? I know that was a big thing, during the run-up to the Nationals moving to D.C.
I'm not sure. I would say maybe marginally, but I don't think it's a big deal.
That hasn't hurt their ability to carry a $100 million payroll if the team's decent.
I mean, they're on the same network, Masson.
Right.
They're both on there. So the Orioles still get a piece of that pie if the Nationals are drawing a lot of people watching their games.
Orioles own that network?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not so much a rival. Well, it's partially a rivalry thing, but it's more like a brotherly rivalry. So I don't think it's hurt him that much. I do have one friend who was an Orioles fan for a while, but then got fed up with Peter Angelos and the team and went over and became a Nationals fan. But I don't think that's a hugely common occurrence. Just because there's so much history of baseball in Baltimore, I don't think a lot of people are going to drop that.
Right.
To move to, especially since the Nationals haven't been any good either. So
that's
we'll
true.
See if the Nationals start picking up with Zimmerman and Strasburg and Harper and all those guys. Maybe you will see it start to cut into the Orioles' ability, in all those ways. But at this point, I wouldn't think that it's a huge, significant occurrence.
Do you see the current? We're getting up on an hour and a half, so I want to throw this one at you before we go. Do you see the management that's in place in Baltimore right now as one that can put a winning team on the field, that can put a playoff team on the field, or do you think the problems of the team go deeper than that? which is obviously an allusion to their owner. I'll just say, I mean, is Angelo such a poison? Is he you know, destroying the club? Or
I'm amazed it took this long to say his name.
Yeah, I know, right?
At this point, my understanding is that Andy McPhail has more or less free reign to do what he wants. So I don't know if I'm sure a lot of the things going back in previous years have to do with Angelos. At this point, I'm not sure if that's a significant impediment.
Okay.
I don't know.
Sure.
But that's my understanding. The front office that they have now can put a competitive team on the field. I don't like their chances of doing that at all. But
I'm sorry to laugh at that. I just thought it was funny.
No, I mean, it's fine. I think they're fine. If Andy McPhail was in the National League, not in the NL, I guess in the NL Central or the NL West, he'd be a perfectly fine general manager.
Okay.
I don't think he's capable of competing with the other teams in the AL East. I think all of the other AL East general managers are at least a head above him with the way the team is run. I don't know if that's all on McPhail, but just since he's been here, that he's an improvement clearly over what the Orioles had is sad. That if he goes, I have no confidence that the team will get someone better than him is also kind of sad. So I really don't know if he's going to be the one to get this franchise competitive again, and if not him, who? But
are you just really praying for this like realignment scenario where divisions disappear?
That would be helpful, but I don't think. I mean, it's not like if the Orioles were in the NL, the AL Central, they'd be competing. They're just not a good team. A lot of things haven't gone well, but a lot of the things the team does aren't conducive to being competitive either.
So, Daniel, if you had to place your vast personal wealth on the line, would you say that the Orioles will make the playoffs in the next 10 years or not?
10 years?
Yeah, 10 years.
That's a long time.
Yeah, it is.
Though it is less time than since the Orioles have had their last winning season.
I mean, so. Yeah. I can explain to you why I picked 10 years, but don't worry about it. Go ahead.
Sure.
Well, hold on. Let me throw in a wrinkle here.
Ooh.
Or a follow-up, anyway. Which do you think would happen first? They reach the Pirates' length of time without a winning season, or they make the playoffs?
Well, that's 8 years, right, from now?
Yeah, so you got 8 more years.
Is it 8 more?
I think so. Yeah, it was 18. If they win this year, they cut the streak at 18.
The Orioles are over 10.
Are they? Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure they are.
Well, you would know.
I want to say it's been 14. I think they're like that. Watching the Pirates play well. Well, let's not say play well.
Wait,
watching
14, the Pirates, 14 since they were 500 or 14 since
winning season?
Wow. No, he's right. 1997.
Yeah, they made the playoff. That's the year they went wire to wire, I believe. And made the playoffs and lost in the playoffs. And they haven't won since then. So it's a legitimate concern watching the Pirates win games that they will have a winning season, but the Orioles will continue losing and actually break the Pirates' record. So I don't remember what the question is.
Do you think they'll make the playoffs in 10 years?
And you
can start by next year. You don't have to count this year. We know they're not making it this year.
That is very gracious of you.
Yeah, thank you.
With the five-team best thing?
Just assume that everything stays as is.
Oh, as is?
Yeah.
I wouldn't bet on it.
Okay.
I'm not saying it's 0%, but I would think it's less than 50.
How does that make you feel as a fan? I mean, I think it, you know, we're really spoiled in a way, you know, with the Red Sox and the honestly, I mean, the players are really good, but the tremendous management team that's in place, you know, that sort of ensures, even if they have a down year, that you know, the following seasons won't be. And I feel really confident in saying the Red Sox will make the playoffs just about every year, you know, as long as the people who are currently running the team are continue to do so.
I mean, must be nice.
It is. Yeah. It's honestly wonderful. but I mean, how does one continue to root for a team where you don't have confidence in the people running the team and you don't have confidence that the team will ever be any good?
Well, not ever. I think I will see them in the playoffs sometime, but I would not bet that it will happen in the next 10 years just because the current crop of players they have now doesn't look like it's going to make it, especially if Brian Mattis continues throwing 86 miles an hour. If they only have one good starting pitcher out of this crop of young guys, they're probably not making the playoffs in the next couple years. And then after that, you hope the next wave all comes together at the same time. And that's probably your 10-year, that finishes out your 10-year window.
Yeah.
And betting on that doesn't seem like a good idea. So I don't think they'll make the playoffs in the next 10 years, but they could. They'll make it eventually, assuming there's still a Major League Baseball and they still have a team in Baltimore. It's kind of hard watching it on a day-to-day basis with that, but mostly it's ignored. You concentrate on, you know, Matt Wieters throwing out runners and J.J. Hardy being good and that kind of stuff. So it doesn't really enter into the thought process that often. But if you have to think about it, it's not fun, I would say.
I apologize for making you think about it.
No, it's fine. These aren't things that I'm saying for the first time.
I didn't figure.
Yeah, I've expressed these thoughts to people before. makes people not very happy with me to hear them, who are Orioles fans, but I'm just, you know, from my perspective, I think that's the truth, I guess that's probable, so I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I don't see any point in doing that.
Well, on that uplifting note... I'll ask Mark. Mark, is there anything you want to cover that we haven't?
No, I mean,
you guys have something positive we can end on here.
Sure. Nick Markakis' slugging percent. No.
Hey.
You guys get to face Chris Jakubauskas and Mitch Atkins next week. Is that exciting?
Who? who are those people? Are they left-handed? Are either of them left-handed?
No, they are not left-handed.
Ha! Yes. Now I'm excited. That's uplifting. Actually, Boston's been really good against left-handers, despite all the complaining early in the year. But that's a topic for another podcast.
Yeah. Uplifting. Camden Yards is a just amazing and beautiful place to watch a ball game.
I need to go.
I will take that. Good comment. It is absolutely true.
Yeah,
even if the team isn't winning, it is still a really nice place to watch a ball game.
I had my bachelor party there. That's the kind of happening guy that I am. But but yeah, no, it's I've been to many, many games there, and always enjoy going to see a game there. It's a terrific place to watch a game. I haven't been to every single stadium, but I've been to a lot, and that's behind Fenway. That I think is my favorite. So for whatever that's worth.
I want to go.
Okay.
someone bring me to Camden Yards.
Come on down, Mark.
Oriole Park at Camden Yards, sorry.
Yeah. Does anyone call it Oriole Park?
There's like a whole acronym for it that I don't know. I don't know if you're supposed to spell it out or say it and how you would pronounce it if you did.
I think generally people just keep it to Camden Yards.
That's what I've always called it.
How would you say the acronym, though?
I don't know.
It's like OPA. Oriole Park at Yards. Yeah.
Oh.
Opacky.
I've never heard that before. I've seen it written out, but I've never heard it spoken. As an actor.
Yeah, I know. I don't know if anyone ever says it.
It sounds like an Irish midget.
I mean, it's still better than Overstock.com Coliseum or whatever the F it is.
Overstock. Yeah, I can't even. I'm just not going to.
Is that Oakland?
Yeah.
Currently, see, yes. Although
when they change
later.
Their names, I never remember. I just refer to it as whatever the old place is.
I wrote like Oakland Coliseum all the time, or the Coliseum in Oakland. I have, you know, I had no idea what. I was like, you know, that park, the one the Athletics play in.
Yeah. There. Yeah. There's no
so
reason.
Don't ever name Camden Yards after a discount wholesale goods website. And you'll be ahead of the game.
I'll pass that along.
Yeah, maybe they'll listen to that.
Well, Daniel, I want to thank you for staying up late with us, having talking baseball for an hour and a half plus now. It's been a real pleasure chatting with you, and the best of luck with your various blogs and the Orioles too, except for this weekend.
Thanks very much.
And Mark, that was a lip smack. Anything there?
I didn't do anything.
You did? Yeah, you did.
Don't accuse me of things. Thank you for coming on, Daniel.
Okay, so I guess that does it for us. We will be back next week, unless Mark gets sick or I get sick. But other than that, we will talk to you guys on Wednesday. So thanks again for listening.